Chapter 2.
Always fine lines between us, they say nowadays. Don't mean much, cause an anchor in the sand. What we did, but my ship set sail, and I'm here to tell that I don't mean like the others, and I yes, I've been searching, and I can't seem to find what I'm wanting. It's changing all the time, and if you notice a different side of mine, then I found what I've been looking for. Found what I've been looking for, yeah. Found what I've been looking for, yeah. Found what I've been looking for, yeah. Should I wait, should I stay?
The review of the treaty details only takes a few minutes, although Cody's advisors don't really seem to be on board with it. The young redhead, Bo-Katan, continues making sharp comments in Mandoa through the rest of the meeting. Obi-Wan doesn't react to the comments, continuing to pretend to not speak their language, although it's difficult with Anakin constantly pestering him for translations across their bond. He has to hide his snort when one of the younger advisors, Riska, makes a comment that, "It'll be fine. If he's a shithead, I'll kill him." As this is said with a very definite tap on the hilts of her twin vibro knives, Obi-Wan suspects she has a higher opinion of her skills with a blade than is warranted. Or a lower opinion of his skills. In any case, the meeting concludes soon enough. And with the marriage definitively on, which will disappoint the council, Obi-Wan is sure, Cody informs him that Obi-Wan can meet his youngest brother now. Boba is apparently 12 standard and has just gotten his first set of armor and has been in school all day despite being very eager to meet his older brother's husband. Obi-Wan suspects Boba isn't going to be so happy once he sees who his brother is actually marrying. He follows after Cody, Rex walking with them, while an aide escorts Anakin to a hastily prepared guest room. Obi-Wan suspects his room will be next to or near Anakin's. He's hoping for a decent bed, a window, maybe a potted plant or two, something at least approaching the quiet warmth and hominess of his rooms in the temple. Although he'd never ask for anything so trivial. A place to sleep is more than enough. Besides, the palace is nice, and appears to have a decent-sized library. Surely they wouldn't object to him looking through their archives. It'd be quite interesting to compare Mandalorian history to the accounts in the Jedi archives. He'll have to ask Cody about that later. Now, though, he forces himself to focus on the task at hand, which is making a, hopefully, good impression on Boba Fett. Cody leads him to a decently sized room off the main hallway, with chairs and rugs and a desk covered in holonovels and datapads. A skinny preteen in splotchy blue and silver armor is leaning over the desk, muttering to himself. He's got a full head of curly black hair and the same darker skin as his brother's. "Hey, Vodica," Cody says. "You wanted to meet Maridur when they got here, right?" He sounds amused. Boba spins around in his chair, already looking excited. That is, until his eyes fall on Obi-Wan's robes, his lightsaber. And then the excitement turns to confusion and almost disgust.
"Orivad, what the criff are you doing with a JT?"
he says in Mandoa, and Obi-Wan keeps his face blank, although he wants to respond. It's not the right time to reveal that yet. Cody smirks a bit when he answers, in basic still.
"Gods, Boba, language!"
This is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like I said, he's going to be Maridur.
"He's a JT,"
Boba says flatly. How perceptive of you, Obi-Wan says with a smile, tucking his hands inside the sleeves of his robe. What gave it away? The robes? The impeccable manners? Boba curls his lip and says, Your horrible accent. Well, that's certainly one way to put it. Charming, Obi-Wan says. I must say, I'm impressed. You're less of a child than some of the diplomats I've had to deal with. None of them appreciated my accent either. I'm starting to think it's a conspiracy. He smiles a bit more, amused. Boba narrows his eyes, considering, clearly not sharing the amusement. You sound like you have a stick up your... He pauses, shoots Cody a glance, and then finishes. Shebs. Obi-Wan laughs at that, surprising himself. You know, you aren't the first one to say that, he says thoughtfully. Although most of the people who say that haven't met the Jedi Council. And if there's anyone more boring than me in the galaxy, it's probably Master Windu. I'm pretty sure he does have a stick up his... What did you call it? Shebs? The kid looks away quickly, but not before Obi-Wan has the chance to see him crack a bit of a smile, which he takes as a success. Although he's entirely too aware, the smile is most likely due to the fact that he, a Jedi, just used the word ass. Most people seem surprised when a Jedi swears for some reason. The Force may be a wonderful tool, but it can't replace the satisfaction of Kriff. Anyway, Cody interjects, almost grumpy. I'm marrying him, so you're gonna have to actually listen to your teacher and get some manners, Dikud. Boba scowls, glares at the wall for a minute. Rex and I think he's being a dumbass. He says to Obi-Wan, even before we knew you're a Jedi. Well, Obi-Wan says lightly, the Jedi Council thinks the same of me, so I suppose we're, and he nods at Cody, in the same boat. Although I think Anakin is perversely excited about this whole thing. Who's Anakin? Boba looks properly interested for the first time. My Padawan. He's a few years older than you. I think you'd like him. I don't like Jatise, Boba snaps, back to scowling again. Well, it was worth a try. Obi-Wan just smiles to himself, remembering Anakin as a preteen, prone to pretending he didn't want any affection whatsoever, and then sulking in a corner for hours when Obi-Wan didn't give him a hug. Sometimes Obi-Wan misses those days. Rarely. Anakin was a handful. Of course, some things never change. So far, this is going slightly better than Cody anticipated. Boba is, of course, not a fan of Kenobi being a Jedi, but really, this is about the best this meeting could have gone. Cody gives his vodka a look, warning, because they are going to talk later. Cody may not be thrilled that his reader-to-be is a Jedi either, but he'd prefer his vode to at least be tolerably polite to Kenobi. Kenobi is elite now, so this is just the way things are going to be. When Boba's teacher starts to look irritated that they're still interrupting his lessons, Cody breaks into the conversation. All right, Boba, I think you've insulted Kenobi enough for today. We're gonna go now. Boba mutters under his breath, gets a look from his teacher, and crosses his arms. Nice to meet you, he grumbles, to Kenobi. And Cody smiles slightly. Likewise, Kenobi says with a smile. Boba plops down in his chair and turns his back on them, and Cody snorts a little, then gestures for Kenobi to come with him.
"We have some rooms for you," he explains as they leave. "If you want, I can show you to them so you can get comfortable."
"All right," the Jedi answers. And so Cody turns to Rex with a small smile.
"See you at dinner, Vodica."
It's a dismissal, but one Rex appears to be thankful for. He throws a loose salute and turns around to, presumably, go check in with his men, who he's had keeping an eye out in case this was still a trap. Cody suspects they won't have found anything amiss, which will disappoint Rex.
"I don't know what to tell you about them," Cody says quietly, smiling a bit. "They haven't strictly approved of this plan this whole time, so I wouldn't take it personally."
Kenobi, walking with his hands folded behind his back, gives Cody a small, wry smile.
"It's all right. I don't mind. As far as Boba is concerned, Anakin was that age once too, so I'm quite familiar with how that goes."
Cody snorts.
"He'll get over it. Probably."
He wants to say everyone else will too, but he doesn't really know. And he'd rather not bring that up anyway. Today is something of a diplomatic mess thus far. Kenobi chuckles quietly. It's a nice laugh. Cody thinks he could like Kenobi, Jedi or no. At the very least, his boudoir will be handsome, although good looks are probably wasted on Jedi. The suite they have set up for Kenobi is across the hallway from Cody's own, and they will have given Anakin a guest room next to Kenobi's. Cody leads Kenobi to the door to his suite and pushes the door open, gesturing.
"These are your rooms, as long as you're happy with them. If you have things to get from your ship, I can send some people to get them."
The suite is, of course, nice. It's for the Duke's husband. What else would anyone expect? But Kenobi's eyes widen, and he shifts a little.
"This is much more than I was expecting," he says, in something of a disarmed voice. And Cody finds himself smiling a little at his apparent surprise.
"I can get my own things," he adds. "Don't worry about it."
"I'll send someone," Cody says, mildly.
"In any case, if you and Anakin want to join my brothers and me for dinner, you can."
"As long as they wouldn't be intruding on anything," Kenobi says with a nod. "I'd be glad to."
"You wouldn't be," Cody says. That's not strictly true, but Rex and Boba are going to have to get used to somebody else being part of their family.
"I can come get you. Just let me know if you need anything."
"I will." Kenobi inclines his head. "Speaking of Anakin, I'll need to talk to you about him at some point."
"Oh?"
Cody nods encouragingly.
"They might as well discuss it now.
Then he is going to have to go calm his boer, so that Jango doesn't have to find out that Kenobi is a JT on the day of the wedding." Kenobi sighs a little, leaning against the doorway to his rooms, and explains. "Anakin is likely less than a year from his knighting. Until that happens, I'd appreciate it if he was allowed to stay on Mandalore so that I can continue his training. It would make things much simpler than if he was on Coruscant, especially since so much of our training would require me to be there in person."
Cody chuckles a little, despite himself. He imagines Anakin living in the palace could be a real source of entertainment.
He doesn't say that, though.
"I'm sure that would be fine. If he's going to need his own rooms, though, I'll just need to have those prepared. As long as your training wouldn't be unduly disruptive to the way things are done here."
Kenobi shrugs.
"We're both used to sharing much smaller quarters than these," he says, gesturing at his suite. "Although I'm sure Anakin appreciates having some privacy. As far as training goes, as long as no one would be overly upset by our borrowing your training yard for lightsaber forms, it shouldn't be disruptive."
Cody wants to wince at the mention of the training yard. The head weapons trainer and his Boer's oldest friend, Jack Ordo, will not like Jatise being in his space. But Cody can deal with that later, because Jack's going to have to get used to this just like everyone else. Fine then. I have no objections. And Cody smiles. That generally means everyone else agrees. Was that all? Yes, thank you, Kenobi says, and Cody smiles a little. In that case, I have some work to do, so you'll have to excuse me for a while. I'll come get you for dinner. Of course, Kenobi says with a smile, and Cody nods and turns to go. He has even more to do today now. But he supposes this all could have been worse. Still, it's going to be interesting explaining this to his dad. The next morning, Obi-Wan drags himself out of the entirely too comfortable bed at his accustomed time, spends a few minutes in the wonderfully private shower, pulls on his tunic and tabard and boots, settles himself cross-legged in the middle of the floor, and lets his mind drift into the Force's comforting currents. As has come to be, unfortunately, typical, the Force is dark and clouded, humming with a feeling of danger, distant and in the future, but all the more powerful for it, pulsing with the constant heavy dark of the Sith Master. Still, through it all, he can feel the Force signatures of those around him, glowing brightly against the darkness. The brightest of all being Anakin. Who is, Obi-Wan is pleased to feel, awake. Excellent. Obi-Wan won't have to drag his Padawan out of bed for morning training. The meditation is steadying, centering. If not the most calming today. Obi-Wan pulls himself out of it after a while and stands, stretches the blood back into his muscles, and leaves his rooms. Goes to Anakin's and knocks, with a light mental prod across their training bond. Anakin grumbles mentally, but comes to the door in his robes and minus his cloak.
Time to train?
He asks, rubbing at his eyes. Obi-Wan nods. The Duke gave me permission yesterday to use their training yard. Anakin huffs, then nods, says, We should go, then. His Padawan braid is messy. He clearly hasn't redone it this morning. Qui-Gon would have scolded. Although Obi-Wan is still certain Qui-Gon only scolded him about his messy Padawan braid, because Dooku scolded him. It's easy enough to find a guard willing to take them to the training yard, which, despite the earliness of the hour, has a decent amount of soldiers in it. Some sparring with vibro-knives, some engaged in target practice, others practicing hand-to-hand. An older man with brown hair and a massive, twisted scar covering half his face is overseeing, occasionally calling out feedback or instructions in Mandoa. His face looks vaguely familiar, although Obi-Wan can't place why. He pushes the trainer out of his mind, leads Anakin over to an unoccupied corner, flips his saber into his hands. Katas or a spar? He asks. Anakin considers for a minute, debating. I'll do a couple of Shien katas to warm up, and then practice my Jim So in a spar. And he nods, decisively. Obi-Wan smiles, nods in agreement, steps back a few paces to watch as Anakin ignites his lightsaber and starts stepping through the motions. Relax your shoulder, Obi-Wan says, and Anakin pauses to watch as Obi-Wan ignites his own saber and mimics the slash. Reach into the motion. Don't focus so hard on where the strike ends. Let the Force guide you. That's so unspecific, Anakin mutters. But he repeats the slash anyway, this time with his shoulder more relaxed. Oh, that is better. You're right, I usually am, Obi-Wan says wryly. Settles back onto his heels again, and waits until Anakin steps out of the kata with a sigh and a smile.
I'm ready now, Master.
Good. Obi-Wan lifts his saber, slides neatly into his opening stance, and says, Whenever you're...
Before he can finish, Anakin attacks. Good. That's what Obi-Wan's told him to do. Don't wait for your opponent to be ready.
He parries the heavy two-handed slash, slides back out of reach, twirls his saber a bit, raises an eyebrow.
Come now, Anakin. I've told you not to leave with such an obvious move.
Anakin attacks again in earnest, and so the spar goes. With Obi-Wan staying on the defensive, relaxed, every move efficient, and Anakin wearing himself out with too much strength in his blows. Efficiency, Anakin, Obi-Wan says, sliding out from yet another overhead blow, then lunging back in for a series of close-quarter cuts and slashes that end with Anakin's saber on the ground a meter or two away. And keep your guard up. It's been dropping too much lately. He steps back as Anakin swears in Hadith, extends his hand, and calls his saber back, igniting the blue blade again.
You make it look so easy, Anakin says, on the edge of a whine.
I focus on my technique, and I listen to the Force. That's half your problem, Anakin. You need to pay as much attention to the Force as to the physical world. The Force is what will allow you to deflect blaster bolts with the greatest accuracy, what will enable you to counter all my strikes.
I don't believe you, Anakin huffs. Well, I do about the blaster fire part, but how can you sense a lightsaber?
Obi-Wan stops, smiles a bit, and reaches into his belt pouch, pulls out a roll of bandages. Blindfold me.
What?
Just do it, Anakin, he says, rolling his eyes. You don't believe me that the Force can help you in a duel? Then blindfold me. Anakin frowns, but does as he's asked, a triple layer of bandages wrapping over Obi-Wan's eyes so he can't see anything through them.
But Master, don't go easy on me either, Obi-Wan says, igniting his saber again and slipping into his opening stance, closing his eyes and reaching out into the Force.
He can sense Anakin's confusion, the trainer's irritation, fascination from someone he thinks is Cody. Interesting, he hadn't realized Cody was watching. And equal parts interest and anger from the Mandalorian soldiers watching. And he can hear the hum of Anakin's kyber crystal, can sense Anakin's movement as he lunges forward, definitely not going easy, although he does feel reluctant. And it's simple enough to twist his wrist to counter, slide under the strike, and 1, 2, 3, 4, and Anakin's saber is flying out of his hand. He can feel Anakin rolling away to catch it before it hits the ground. Anakin lunges again, less restrained, and Obi-Wan dances back, smiles a bit. Rolls forward, jumps to his feet and twists around, and before Anakin's finished following the movement, he sweeps his saber back in to hover hot and humming at Anakin's throat. Focus, he says softly, and with a twist of the Force, tugs the blindfold away. Cody wakes up earlier than usual to relax for a while in his room before his responsibilities for the day commence. It's a good thing he does as well, because just a few minutes after he wakes up, he receives an angry calm from Jack Ordo.
Cody Fett, there are 2 Jatisse in my training yard. Tell me you have a good explanation for that.
Cody swears, quietly. He hadn't expected Kenobi to do any training already, or he would have spoken to Jack earlier.
I'm sorry, Elor. I meant to talk to you. I gave them permission to use the training grounds. Knight Kenobi is the diplomat I'm supposed to be marrying.
Jack's first response is a string of fierce insults in harsh Mandoa.
I thought I'd taught you better than this,
Jack growls when he finished swearing.
They are sparring, and I don't want them here.
I gave them permission, Cody repeats firmly. I trust them not to criff things up. Well, he trusts Kenobi not to. And he expects Kenobi will manage his Padawan.
I am not responsible for them. We need to talk about this.
Cody pinches the bridge of his nose and heads over to collect his armor, painted neatly with blue and white and hints of gold-yellow. I'm coming down, Jack. For Christ's sake, please don't shoot anybody, and I'll try to explain better. He doesn't get a response, although he's sure Jack has just scoffed and crossed his arms. He gets up, clips his darksaber to his belt, and heads down to the training grounds. When he arrives, the usual flurried activity of Verde training has stilled, and almost all the warriors have stopped whatever they were doing to watch the ongoing sparring match between Kenobi and Anakin. Cody glances at them, raising his eyebrows. Kenobi is graceful, moving with a lightness you only see in the most refined fighters. He is precise and focused, and Cody suspects, powerful. He smiles a little and walks over to Jack, who's standing back from the spar and watching it with a look of disgust. Jack Ordo is the only other survivor of the massacre of Galadron besides Cody's Bur. Django gave him a position as weapons trainer for his warriors, and so Cody and Rex both learned most of their combat skills from him, starting when they were each 10. Jack didn't survive the massacre unscathed. The right side of his weathered face is bisected by a red, raw burn scar that destroyed his eye and left a furrow in his graying hairline. The remaining eye, gray and fierce, is always wary, and Jack doesn't miss much. And his hatred for Jedi surpasses Jango's. Jack has always been angrier and held grudges longer. I didn't know he was going to be a Jedi, Cody says mildly, falling into a comfortable stance next to Jack, still watching Kenobi. But I made the decision I felt was right. It is understood that I am only allying with Stujon and not with the Jatise. That does not matter, Jack growls. You are tying your elite and your Buer's elite to killers. You should have more respect for the people we have lost than that, Odd. Cody glances sharply at him. I am familiar with our history, Jack. Kenobi has been respectful, and he is acting in the role of a representative of his people, not the Jatise. I am perfectly capable of dealing with the Jeti Riduer, and if he breaks our deal, then he can leave. This was my decision, and my advisors accepted it. You will have to also. Jack curls his lip, but just shakes his head instead of arguing more. You should have spoken to me. I told you I intended to before they came here. Cody stops and focuses on the spar because Anakin appears to be tying a wrap around Kenobi's head and over his eyes. Jatise, Jack mutters bitterly, but Cody ignores him, a bit fascinated. He doesn't entirely know what he expects. He has never seen a Jedi fight before this, although he himself is proficient with a saber, and although he's sure Kenobi wouldn't blind himself if he didn't think himself capable of sparring just as well without his sight, he thinks he'll need to see it to believe it. As it turns out, Kenobi is almost as impressive and controlled blindfolded as he was before, which is impressive, even if it is only because of the Force. When Kenobi neatly darts past Anakin's guard and pulls the blindfold away from his eyes with a small smirk, Cody can't help a grin. He also ignores Jack, who's glaring at him like he's just kicked a cat, and walks over to the Jedi, tucking his hands behind his back. Good morning, Kenobi, Anakin, he says in basic, vaguely amused. That was interesting. Good morning.
I was simply proving a point to Anakin, Kenobi says with a smile, then pauses and adds, and we are getting married. You might as well call me Obi-Wan. Cody chuckles. Fair enough. Of course, you could just call me Cody then. Anakin wrinkles his nose, looking annoyed, but Cody pretends not to notice. Of course, Obi-Wan says, seeming almost surprised. Then his eyes fall to Cody's belt, and he asks, out of curiosity, how good are you with that saber? Cody realizes he's referring to the dark saber, and shrugs a little, smiling. I'm all right. He ignores Jack snorting behind him. If Jack is going to be loitering around and glaring, Cody is not going to try to make him be part of the conversation. You should spar with him, Master, Anakin says, making Cody chuckle. I'm not sure how that would go. Cody taps the hilt of the saber and shakes his head. Actually, I wonder if I could talk to you both, just briefly. It seems like a wise idea to explain Jack to Obi-Wan, so that Obi-Wan doesn't get himself shot. Sure, Obi-Wan says. Although Anakin's idea does have merit. He grins, and Cody lets his lips quirk up in a small answering smile. Maybe so. He gestures, walks to the opposite side of the training grounds and away from Jack. Obi-Wan and Anakin follow him, and slowly the warriors around them start to go back about their business. I want to talk to you about the head weapons trainer, over there. He nods at Jack Riley. That's Jack Ordo, and I meant to warn you about him before you came down here. Obi-Wan stills, tucking his hands behind his back and frowning. That name is in the Jedi Archives, he says quietly, as the only other survivor of Galadron. There hadn't been an image with the words. Otherwise, he would have recognized Jack. The entry in the archives is too small for the scope of the massacre. Correct, Cody says seriously. I would have preferred to warn him before you came here, for reasons I'm sure you can understand. Obi-Wan rubs at his forehead, sighing. I do understand, he says, heavily. My apologies, Cody. I hope I haven't made things more difficult for you. Before Cody can answer, Anakin frowns and says, What do you mean, only other survivor? Obi-Wan sighs again, closes his eyes, and says tightly, There's a reason I told you to read that entry in the archives, Anakin. Jack Ordo and Cody's father, Jango Fett, were the only two survivors of a Jedi-led massacre. We were misled, but that does not excuse what happened. Cody nods solemnly. No, it does not. In any case, Jack hates Jedi. More than the rest of us. Obi-Wan hums thoughtfully, considering. If our presence here causes him undue amounts of stress, I can't imagine it's easy for him to see a Jedi and not think about watching his brothers and sisters in arms die. We can find another place for saber work. The convenience of the training yard is by far the less important thing. Cody sighs, says apologetically, I don't like to say it, but for the first week or so, maybe I should find you somewhere else to train. Obi-Wan nods. It's a good idea, both for Jack's sake and to avoid distracting the rest of the soldiers. We don't want to inconvenience anyone, he says tiredly, the relaxed lightness of the sparring session fading away as he reminds himself of the situation. Well, I'm aware that our presence here is already an intrusion on your people. Cody shifts his weight a bit, crossing his arms and meeting Obi-Wan's eyes. "You should understand, Obi-Wan," he says gravely, "that as we discussed, this marriage is going to mean you are one of our people now. The more you act as if you don't belong, the less willing we will be to accept you." That doesn't quite make sense to Obi-Wan. He is not one of them. He is one of their greatest enemies, and they all know it. But he supposes Cody would know his people better than Obi-Wan does. Their people? "I suppose then," he says wryly, "this is a good time to tell you I speak Mandoa." Cody raises his eyebrows, clearly surprised, and shifts into Mandoa without pause. "In that case, I should probably apologize for my colleagues in Vode." Obi-Wan shrugs, a bit amused, answers back in the same language, making sure to keep a channel open for Anakin to translate. "Oh, trust me, I've heard worse, and most of what they said is justified. Your people have no reason to trust me." "That doesn't change the fact that it has been disrespectful," Cody says, which is understandable. "I suspect they wouldn't have said most of those things if they knew you understood." He pauses, then grins a bit and adds, "Although Bubba might still have tried to get you to say ass." Obi-Wan laughs, shakes his head. "I think," he says slowly, "that I should stop trying to reconcile your behavior with that of a typical diplomat. You are not at all like one of them. It's..." And he pauses, considering a moment before admitting, "refreshing." Cody chuckles. And it's a nice laugh, Obi-Wan decides. Genuine and warm. Smiling some, although he's half serious when he says, "And I was trying so hard, too. What gave it away? The armor or the facial scarring?" "The armor I expected, and the facial scarring isn't exactly unusual," Obi-Wan says, smiles. "In all honesty, it's that you're genuine. Most politicians are not." He pauses, briefly cuts off Anakin's ability to listen in to the Mandoa, says more quietly, "Most politicians tend to take advantage of the fact that Jedi are typically considered self-sacrificing and monastic to, for example, give them less than adequate lodging." Anakin's complaining, silently, but that doesn't really matter. "To be quite honest, I'm slightly out of my element in this. I'm not used to dealing with sincerity." Cody finds himself surprised, ironically, by Obi-Wan's abrupt and quiet honesty. He smiles slightly and nods. "I think you'll need to get used to it. Mandoade are many things, but dishonest isn't often one of them. Or perhaps, more accurately and less politely, most Mandoade aren't full of shit. Who has the time or patience for elaborate lies? Certainly not him. As to your quarters, you are, for all intents and purposes, going to be a duke. We're hardly going to give you a closet to sleep in." Obi-Wan smiles. "I'm afraid I've somewhat misjudged your people." Cody wishes he was surprised. "There is, perhaps, some bias against Mandalore in Jedi teachings." He shrugs dismissively. "I have never slept in a closet, but I also never actually had a set of rooms to myself." Cody allows himself a proper, warm smile. "Well, hopefully you enjoy them. It goes without saying, but you can move things around or get rid of things or ask for more things for your rooms, if you want, since you're going to be living there after all." Cody wouldn't have thought he'd have to explain that, but he supposes if Obi-Wan didn't expect nice rooms, then... Cody's also beginning to think he might have assumed too much,
thinking that Obi-Wan would understand that he is marrying into an almost entirely equal position with Cody, despite their talks. To an outsider, it really wouldn't seem obvious, he supposes. Thoughtfully, smiling a bit to himself, Obi-Wan says, Qui-Gon would have had a fit if he learned I had my own rooms and didn't get myself a plant. Then, before Cody can ask who Qui-Gon is, or was, Obi-Wan refocuses on him and says, I appreciate it. Actually, I was wondering. I noticed the palace has a decently sized library. I was hoping I could explore some. Research is a particular interest of mine. Cody makes a mental note to himself to see about having a couple plants put in Obi-Wan's rooms, then crosses his arms and shakes his head with an amused smile. Again, you live here now. You can go anywhere you want. You don't have to ask me. Well, except for anywhere Jack is, he adds, glancing over his shoulder with a bit of a grimace. There's not much I can do about him. Jack really only listens to Cody because he wants to, and because Cody is Jango's son. Cody takes that for the respect it is. Obi-Wan nods. Duly noted. As far as Jack goes, is there anything I can do to help acclimatize him, for lack of a better word? Cody laughs, although strictly speaking, this isn't the funniest situation. Jack doesn't like most people, he says honestly. Frankly, don't bother him, and don't try to be friends, and don't startle him, and he'll probably, maybe, tolerate you. Eventually. Which, I realize, doesn't sound promising. I understand. And it's something, Obi-Wan says with a nod. Good. In any case, I suppose we should go. Cody's going to have to apologize to Jack later. Again. Gods, what a morning. Damn it. Anakin mutters half to himself. I wanted to watch you two fight. Maybe sometime when it wouldn't make Jack have a panic attack, Cody says dryly and basic, and starts back inside. There are preparations to finish today, although most of them don't require his input anymore. And tomorrow, his Bo'ir comes home. It's been a while since Jango has been back on Mandalore, and Cody can't wait to see him. Although, explaining to his Bo'ir that he's decided to marry a Jedi will be awkward. Obi-Wan is introduced to Jango Fett the next day. The same day the wedding is to be held, earlier in the morning, so there's plenty of time for both Obi-Wan and Cody to get ready. Anakin is not there. He is apparently building a droid, and doesn't want to meet the angry father of your slightly terrifying husband. Obi-Wan doesn't entirely blame him. Sometime during the day yesterday, three potted plants had miraculously appeared in his rooms. He hasn't said anything to Cody about them yet, but he suspects his offhand comment about Qui-Gon was the motivation behind the plants. He doesn't mind them. In fact, it's quite the opposite. He's always enjoyed plants. But he'd been quite surprised. It's an uncommonly thoughtful gesture. He doesn't put on the dress robes for the meeting with Jango, although a part of him wants to. Leaves his cloak in his rooms, which are light and airy. Meets Cody, Rex, and Boba in a hallway in front of one of the cozier reception rooms. Doesn't fidget, even though a part of him wants to. Instead, he breathes in and out, slow and careful, releases the nerves into the Force. Boba's grinning when Obi-Wan walks up. Dad could kick your ass, he says cheerfully. I'm sure, Obi-Wan says dryly. I will endeavor to make sure he doesn't feel the need to.
That takes all the fun out of it,
the preteen mutters, shoving his curly hair out of his eyes and grumbling to himself. There's a brief pause, and then Rex steps forward and pushes the door open, walks through, Boba on his heels. Obi-Wan follows, smiling to himself a bit, feels Cody close behind, and then they're all four inside a medium-sized room with couches and low tables and a holotable in the center of the room. Jango Fett himself is sitting in a chair, in armor, idly inspecting a blaster. Obi-Wan stays at the edge of the room as the three Fett brothers rush forward to greet their father, waits until Cody steps back, and nods at him, says lightly, "This is Obi-Wan."
"A pleasure to meet you, Mandalore," Obi-Wan says, bowing slightly as Jango gets to his feet and holsters his blaster in a single movement.
"Likewise,"
Jango says shortly, eyeing Obi-Wan appraisingly.
"So, you're my Adrador."
"I will be by this evening," Obi-Wan says steadily, keeping his hands still and relaxed by his sides. He is not sure how jumpy Jango is, but it's better safe than sorry, especially in this case. Jango makes a noncommittal sound, thoughtful.
At least you're interesting. You understand, I'm sure, that if you pull any Jedi tricks, I will kill you myself.
I do.
Obi-Wan stifles the entirely inappropriate snort that threatens to slip out.
I assure you, Mandalore, I have no intention of pulling any Jedi tricks on anyone here.
Good.
Jango considers for a moment, then nods.
Very well. I'm satisfied. Although your accent sounds...
like I have a stick up my ass.
Obi-Wan finishes, wryly, raising an eyebrow.
I'm aware. Boba informed me of that already.
Good boy, Boba. Jango says approvingly, and Boba beams.
There's very little further conversation before they're served a small lunch. Obi-Wan sits next to Cody and mainly listens to the conversation around him, with the occasional interjection. Jango and his sons are alike in much more than just looks, he discovers. They all have a similar sense of humor. Obi-Wan's not sure if that can be attributed to Fett or to Mandalorian. Perhaps both. In any case, lunch is definitely not boring, and while he doesn't speak much, he enjoys himself. The prospect of preparing for his wedding is far less enjoyable, but there's only so long it can be put off, and when Cody sighs and gets up and makes his excuses to go, Obi-Wan figures he should probably do the same. Even though it'll likely take him very little time at all to get ready. He showers, neatly trims his hair and beard, dresses in the dress robes he'd had made for the occasion. Charcoal gray, with rich blue accents and golden thread in swirling, vine-like patterns on the edges. The Order's tailor had assured Obi-Wan that the robes would be nice enough for the occasion, with an odd smile, saying that they were sure his intended would appreciate them more than Obi-Wan would know. Obi-Wan doesn't really care how much Cody appreciates the robes, to an extent, as long as he isn't out of place. He can't help fidgeting with the more elaborately patterned cuffs on his sleeves after he dons the robes, though. He should only be concerned with this going wrong because of the effect it'll have on Stujon's situation, because, in all honesty, being released from this would please the Council immensely. But a part of him is already more invested than he should be in the entire concept of this marriage, in sharing a family with Cody and Rex and Boba. Attachment is forbidden, the rest of his mind whispers. Purpose must come before feelings. This is not attachment, of course, or pandering to feelings. This is his duty for his people, his world,
So it is understandable that he wants it to succeed. But perhaps he wants it a little too much.